Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Tuesday, March 26th. Today, Colorado Sun reporter Tracy Ross gives her insight on a ranching couple in Park County who isn't looking at their bottom line as much as being stewards of the land and conservation. Before we begin, whether you're buying a new home, taking a loan to purchase your first car, or putting money away for a rainy day, banking doesn't need to be complicated. Above all else, Alpine Bank wants you to achieve your dreams. It's that simple. For 50 years, their focus has been on you. And for the next 50 years and beyond, that won't change. Because a better tomorrow for their customers starts with helping dreams come true today. Learn more about Alpine Bank and its services at alpinebank.com or stop in and see them. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1931, Colorado faced one of its worst winter storms, proving especially deadly for residents of the High Plains. An intense burst of wintry weather hit eastern Colorado, rendering roads and railroads impassable. Amid these conditions, a bus carrying 22 students from the Pleasant Hill Schoolhouse in Kiowa County veered off the road into a ditch, leading to a tragic ordeal. 5 students and the driver perished due to the extreme cold and a 10-foot snowdrift that trapped them. 17 survivors were rescued 33 hours later, with the community mourning the 6 lives lost at a mass funeral. Before we continue, join the Colorado Sun virtually April 4th as environmental reporter Michael Booth sits down with RTD and Front Range Rail and discusses the future of passenger rail in Colorado. The event is free, just RSVP today. Visit coloradosun.com/2024-train-event. Next, our feature story.
Hey, thanks for tuning in today. I'm David Krause, one of the editors here at the Sun. And we thought we'd switch it up a little bit for our Tuesday episode. And I am happy, as always, to chat on the record, as it were, with Sun reporter Tracy Ross, who zeroes in on rural economic development for the Sun and some awesome features just around the state of Colorado. Hey there, Tracy. How's your day going?
It's pretty good, Dave. How are you?
Doing great, thanks. Always enjoy doing a Sun Up episode with everyone across the staff. So nice to have you on. Hey, let's chat through. You had a really awesome feature for our Colorado Sunday this past weekend about a ranching couple in Park County outside of Fairplay, who is really getting into conservation ranching. But before we talk specifically about Dave and Jean Gottenborg, Tracy, can you kind of give our listeners a rundown of what you mean or what it means, the phrase conservation ranching?
You know, it's basically, as I understand it, it's just ranching with a focus on conservation of the land. So it includes everything from, you know, minimizing the density of your herds to getting conservation easements so that you can assure that the land that you're ranching survives, you know, in its pristine state in perpetuity. And I think the interesting thing in what I just said there is the term, you know, the words pristine state. A lot of people think of ranching, and pristine is probably the last thing that they think about when they think about what cattle do to the land. But you know, there are a lot of ranchers in Colorado who are very progressive, who are working really hard to balance having ruminants out on the land, which are good for the grass in certain numbers, and, you know, preserving these landscapes that without them, in a lot of cases, and without these landowners, could be chopped up into subdivisions and lots of fences and stuff. So conservation ranching really is, you know, trying to work the land in a way that preserves it in, you know, a healthy state.
Hey, Tracy, let's kind of zero in on that and to the point of what they're doing out there near Fairplay. They've got a few thousand acres. They bought the ranch in, 2012 and have really gotten into this idea. They've talked to people at Colorado State University to come out and kind of do a survey on their land. But what have they done, Tracy, out there at the ranch to kind of advance their ranch as far as conservation ranching goes and really that whole overall ethos?
Yeah. So, you know, the survey is a really good place to start. So Dave and Jean Gottenborg, they sold a small oil and gas business. I don't know what it was worth. I wasn't really able to find that out, but they sold this oil and gas business with the idea of buying a ranch. And their kind of prerequisites were they would buy the water rights. So they would own the water rights on whatever piece of property they bought. And so what they have done since they bought it is their whole ethos was, we want this place to be as close to its natural state as it sort of was before anyone was there ranching it, which is started 150 years ago. And so in that effort, you know, they have really looked at density of their cattle herds, and they have systematically reduced the density. And as they've done that, they're starting to look at, okay, over the long term, what is the impact of having 250 head of cattle on their land? What is the impact of 125? What is the impact of 80? And they've since had CSU come and study and sort of do an inventory of the wildlife and all the different species on their land, the plant species, the birds. And it's in a pretty healthy state. I mean, there's a wetland fen there that is only found in one other place. It's Nature Conservancy property. They also have Terrial Creek, which runs through their property, and they have built no less than 7 fish ladders to help the fish in that creek make it to their spawning grounds. And, you know, they're just some of their practices with their cows, which isn't necessarily conservation, but they have a Temple Grandin approved stocking facility. They've just used their money to the best of their ability to make this place a place that's good for cows and a place that's good for, well, primarily elk, because they have a giant herd of elk that come through there. CPW estimates that the elk in that area number 2,300 to 2,500. And so Dave, one of his major goals as a rancher has been to allow these elk to come down and winter and eat the forage on his land in the winter, and then lay down his fences so that elk aren't getting stuck in the barbed wire fences, so that they have a path on their, you know, traditional ancestral migration path and corridor that's not getting encumbered by him being there. So that those are good examples of conservation ranching and what these guys are doing specifically.
And I think it's interesting, and you and I talked about this kind of in our pre-production, but you know, you've got a couple, I think, what, they're in their 60s, they're sold an oil and gas business, but they have a really unique background in that they met up in Estes Park when they were both ranch hands with the idea of someday, hey, we're going to own a ranch and we're going to do this together, and kind of were able to do that as they worked through adulthood, as it were. But you know, there's always these conversations of, oh, these people aren't worried about the bottom line because they have a whole bunch of money. And are they ranchers or are they really hobbyists? Tracy, can you kind of chat about that whole dynamic and, you know, people who are getting into ranching, similar to this couple, you know, who, how do you overcome that barrier or that, idea that these people aren't really ranchers? They're more like, oh, I'm spending my retirement on this fun little hobby.
I think that there are hobby ranchers out there for sure. I can't say I know any of them personally. But I also would say that it's with the Gottenborgs, it's kind of missing the point to call them hobby ranchers because they are, you know, they have had this dream individually and as a couple for decades. And as they, you know, told the story to me, they worked multiple jobs. They didn't take vacations. They saved all their money with this goal in mind. They wanted to go out and be in a place where they were in direct connection with the land. And Dave Gottenborg is like a disciple of Aldo Leopold and Wendell Berry, two of my favorite people. And he just, it's like he has studied the land ethic. He has studied the ethos of these agrarian farmers, ranchers, and conservationists. And he, I don't know, he's just called to use his wealth in a way that is like preserving a piece of this world that he can. And so I know that these kind of ranchers like Louis Bacon or Ted Turner sometimes get a bad rap. And I would argue that they in a way deserve it because they're not even there ranching the land. But Dave Gottenborg and his wife Jean are there. They live there full time and they don't hire, they have hardly any help. They do the work themselves. And like you said, one is 69, one is 68, and they're trying to use their assets, I think, in a kind of a noble way, if you ask me, for the environment.
Tracy, you kind of touched on it in the article as well. We chatted through it a little bit about conservation efforts, some other programs. The Farm Bill right now has got some components to it, right, that does funding for farming conservation, but there's a chance some of that could change. Can you kind of elaborate, Tracy, on what's going on currently with the Farm Bill?
Yeah, so the Farm Bill has sort of been stalled, you know, reauthorizing it in the Congress and the House since September. And I spoke to a nonprofit organization, it's a lobbying organization called Invest in Our Lands, who told me that it's sort of dangerous potentially what's happening right now, because that's $20 billion in funding that has gone out to help ranchers and farmers, producers across the United States stay in business, you know, during the pandemic and after, and, you know, allowing them to do very basic stuff on their land, like, you know, improve their watering facility or, you know, just do these things that are pretty basic to help with conservation. And it's conservation funding specific. And apparently there are a couple people, you know, in politics who are wanting to kind of reallocate those funds, as I understand it. And if that happens, the farmers that I've talked to and the ranchers that I've talked to make it sound like that could be really bad for people who are not exactly like the Gottenborgs, who can't, you know, who don't have the means that they have, and they need this extra funding to keep producing food for Americans. Because, you know, I think as much as sometimes we want to get down on farmers, ranchers, they really are, you know, making food for people. And, you know, I think it's a really tough business to be in with the importing and exporting that we've got going on, and that federal funding can be crucial to their survival.
Yeah, I think it's always an interesting aspect whenever we have any kind of farming stories, because for most of us, we really don't see a lot of that firsthand, right? And we hear about it when we have our different Colorado crops that come through, so through the different seasons. But really, you know, the nitty-gritty of it, I think a lot of people bypass. So I really appreciate you getting in depth on another one of these great Colorado rural stories, but also has that, you know, the people who make up this state. And I think those stories are always a bunch of fun to read and just kind of give you another perspective. So appreciate you bringing that to us. If you haven't already read Tracy's story, you can go check that out at coloradosun.com. It was part of our Colorado Sunday feature, part of our Colorado Sunday newsletter. You can always sign up for that as well at coloradosun.com. Appreciate everybody joining us today. And a reminder that the Colorado Sun is part of the Trust Project. You can check out our ethics policy at coloradosun.com/ethics. Tracy Ross, thanks again for all your hard work with the Colorado Sun and especially bringing us this really unique feature. Make it a great week, huh?
Yeah, thank you so much, Dave. You too.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. A key group of Colorado lawmakers have dismissed a request from the governor and attorney general to hire a group of lawyers to be loaned to the federal government to prosecute gun crimes in federal court. The Joint Budget Committee voted twice this month to reject the proposal, which would have set aside hundreds of thousands of dollars to hire as many as four attorneys to work with the U.S. Attorney's Office. Governor Jared Polis had advocated for the policy, seen as a way of supplementing federal prosecutors with the goal of getting armed criminals off the street. The Colorado University, where a student is charged with killing his suite mate and another person in a dorm room last month, has hired two former U.S. attorneys to review what led to the shooting and recommend whether any campus policies and procedures should be changed. John Southers, who most recently served as mayor of Colorado Springs, and Jason Dunn have been asked to conduct the review prompted by the February 16th shooting at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. A summary of key findings and recommendations will be released, and the university can then work on any suggested changes. The maker of blockbuster arthritis drug Enbrel is suing Colorado over a state board's efforts to possibly cap the price of the drug. Pharmaceuticals giant Amgen says the actions of Colorado's Prescription Drug Affordability Board are unconstitutional because they conflict with federal laws and violate due process rights. A lawsuit the company filed Friday in U.S. District Court in Denver seeks to overturn the board's recent decisions about Enbrel. It also asks a judge to strike down major parts of the law creating the board. A spokesperson for the state said they could not comment on pending litigation. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now a quick message from our team.
This is Christina Pritchett, Marketing and Events Specialist at the Colorado Sun. In my role, I get to witness the Sun's impact on our state firsthand. I always leave our events feeling inspired by those who attend and share the impact that the Sun has in their daily lives. If you're a follower of the Sun, please reach out and tell us what you think of our reporting and let us know how it makes a difference in your life. The Sun is member supported, so if you're not yet a member, please consider joining us today at coloradosun.com/join.